pay the iron price. I have to pay the iron price. I'll never respect you while he lives.
Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Joffrey's thirsty, ill and pain the hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm found. I'm the blood of the north when it all comes down. My word is my bond, and my bond is my word. Valar Dohaeris, all men must serve. See as the raven flies, and time slips by. Valar Morghulis, all men must die.
Welcome to the officially unofficial podcast for HBO's Game of Thrones television series. We are the Game of Thrones podcast brought to you by baldmove.com. I'm your co-host, or main host. I'm your primary ignition host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
The backup emergency secondary host for this podcast.
Completely non-essential.
Well, it's the only one. You're the primary for all of our other podcasts. I have to gloat in my primacy on this one.
Okay, I'll allow it.
We're talking about the episode that we just experienced, the fifth episode of the season four of Game of Thrones, called First of His Name. Jim, I felt like I watched three episodes of Game of Thrones.
Oh, why do you say that?
There's just a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, sure.
Like, when I saw the preview, I was like, holy shit, that is a lot of stuff from a lot of different seasons they're referencing. I hope the non-book readers can strap in and follow along. How did you make out?
Well, it was scary at first because it wasn't scary at first because there were a lot of things that were very recent.
Right.
That they showed in the previously on. But then it got to stuff that is not very recent, like the note and the killing of Liza's husband.
Flashback to the very first scene of the very first episode of the very first season.
It's crazy.
Well,
yeah.
No, I guess that was not quite, but just a damn near. Right after the title sequence, I was like, wow. So let's talk about, speaking of the preview, when they were showing the last on and they made a direct reference to Bran warging into Hodor last season, I was like, fuck yeah, we're going to have revenge of the Hodor.
Yeah, I had...
The Hodor Strikes Back.
Posited this theory. Last episode, I think.
Maybe.
Asking how he might get out of this, and that was one of my theories, so I'm going to take credit for that.
Good job.
So, yeah, I saw that coming.
Good job. I want to leave that for the tail end of the episode, just like Michelle McLaren did.
Okay.
Let's start off. We open, I believe, with Dany and her version of a small council.
I thought we opened with the kinging ceremony.
First or second. I got that coming up next. But regardless...
people will jump right up your ass if I don't correct you. So
I can already feel them.
Yeah, don't send emails. I got him.
Already three or four crammed in there. Hopefully you can stem the tide. So anyway, Dany's meeting with her small council. Turns out she's magically got 97 ships. That's almost enough to get her entire army across the sea to Westeros.
Yeah.
What's she do, Jim?
She says, I'm going to stick around here for a while. I'm going to take back the cities that I already took. She's going to try and lead in her domain, and I think that's a smart thing to do.
Okay, I was wondering, as a non-book reader, as someone just along for the show ride, I know a lot of people have been saying for many seasons, like, oh, wait, so she goes across to Westeros with them dragons.
Yeah, well, I think she needs to wait.
About and what seems to be a postponement of that plan.
Yeah, I think it's a good postponement because they lay out the case in the episode. They say, look, the other kingdoms are going to follow whoever they think is going to win.
Mm.
And right now, that is not you. Maybe if you rolled in with dragons and said, hey, these things are going to be big in a little while, then they'd be like, okay, come back in a little while. But she needs to wait, regardless of what she does. I don't think she has the strength to pull it off right now.
Interesting thought. Jim Jones preaching caution to Khaleesi.
Yep, for the second time.
Anything else we need to talk about? I think we can move on to King's Landing. As we saw, Tommen got crowned. Cersei squared off against Margaery.
Mm-hmm.
Cersei squared off against Tywin, kind of, sort of. Anything there you want to talk about?
Yeah, I just see it being very difficult for Tywin to keep control of Tommen at this point. I mean, we saw the scene last time where, Margaery visits him, and I think that was certainly had an impact, as we're shown this episode, with them making eyes at each other, so... I'm really curious to see how that battle for Tommen plays out.
You know, it's interesting. Also, I want to throw Cersei versus Prince Oberyn into the mix.
Okay.
Because we had that in the offing as well. Just your initial impression, either one of us hadn't seen this twice. When Cersei came up to Margaery, what were you expecting? And did you get what you expected?
No, I didn't get what I expected, because what I expected was her to be a lot more forwardly aggressive and mean to Marjorie. But she seemed to kind of realize that they both knew what was up and played a little more cautiously than I thought she might.
I'll go so far as to say that I thought it seemed like Cersei was trying to bring her into the fold.
Okay, like, maybe.
I know what you're doing, and I know I can't stop you, but you know what I can do, and you can't stop me, so why not let us work in this young man's best interest? That's what I got.
Okay, I could buy that too.
And I think Marjorie threw it right back in her teeth.
Yeah.
That's my gut feeling. What about you?
Well, I mean, I already said what I thought, but I could definitely see it going.
Did you say what you thought about Marjorie going? I thought you just talked about Cersei. I was asking about Marjorie's reaction.
Oh, her reaction.
As I said, I think Marjorie just threw that offer right back in her face. Like, she wasn't having none of it. She antagonized Cersei.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I can't argue with that.
Do you think she saw Cersei's offer as weak? Or why do you think she kind of raised the stakes?
Maybe because she knows the grasp that she has on Tommen. Because, like, right before that, she's making googly eyes. She sees that Cersei spots the googly eyes.
Right.
And goes in for the kill. And then when she's able to, you know, not finish her meal, Marjorie has a little bit of room to feel good about herself, I guess.
Interesting. What make you of Cersei and Tywin's little chat about the
Iron Bank?
Well, not just that, but the Lannisters coming first. Everything for the Lannister legacy.
Yeah, yeah, and it seems like they're boxing their brothers out of it as well. Or they're boxing Cersei's brothers
out. Since you brought that up, it seems to me that Cersei's trying to rig the trial very much against Tyrion. And I don't know that she has to do that. It seems like she's campaigning awful hard. That was the whole point of Cersei and Oberyn too. And it's like, my God, I think this dude's got one foot in the grave and another on a banana peel anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if you have to just pour Astroglide all over the side of the grave. It's like, at one point it's overkill enough, lady.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I don't know why at this point everyone just suddenly believes that it's Tyrion. I mean, Tywin seems to go along with the idea that it's Tyrion, as does everyone else. Is it literally just because he was standing there looking like a fool when Joffrey was killed?
I think that's a meaty enough topic we should postpone it to the full cast.
Okay.
That's a very good topic.
All right, can do.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
I need to go.
Hang on. It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
So we talked about, I think, everything there is to talk about in King's Landing for the moment. Let's talk about the Brienne and Pod roadshow.
Okay.
This show's got a lot, a long storied history of roadshows. Mm-hmm. You could argue that Ned and Robert was the original.
Okay.
You got Bronn and Tyrion. Of course, you got Jaime and Brienne. We've had been delighted this season by Arya and the Hound.
Yep.
And now we got the Pod and Brienne. How are they stacking up?
What do you mean stacking up? Do you just mean how do I enjoy them?
In your pure enjoyment.
I enjoyed that a lot. I mean, there's always just a little bit more heart in the scenes with Brienne.
Yeah.
Given her character, I think that's fitting. She understands people, I think, a lot better than most of the characters in the show. Has certainly more empathy for them. I don't know. And I can see why she wouldn't want Podrick around in the first place, because she's not used to that. She's not a noble person.
And I never really thought about how comically inept being a squire for Tyrion would make someone.
Sure.
I mean, the skills that he excels at are not exactly something he can show Brienne.
Yeah, because he has so many other people doing his bidding. He doesn't have to do anything for him.
Yeah, really, Pod's whole reason for existence was filling his wine glass and taking away his food when he's done.
Yep.
and in, you know, enjoying the ladies when he's required to. I really enjoyed it. Like you said, a lot of these bring funny stuff to the table.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff bring badass. But I'd say, yeah, that definitely what Brand brings to the table is the heart. Pod's bringing the comedy.
Yeah, there's no heart to be found.
Cooking
in
a
the
whole
Hound
rabbit on a spit.
Show.
That's like...
A whole rabbit? Yeah, without even skinning it?
Not even skinning. Forget the gutting. Yeah. You're just going to throw it on there and cook it.
Anybody would know better than that, right?
It's like, yeah, how big of an idiot is this guy? I hear tell of people that don't know how to boil water.
Okay.
That's the only thing that makes that believable to me.
That
just seems amazing. Let's talk about, speaking of road shows, Hound and Arya road show.
Okay, yeah, another highlight of the episode for me.
What did you think of this part of the episode? Obviously, highlight.
Yeah, yeah. I always love watching them interact because it's such an interesting relationship, especially now that we know she wants to kill him.
Still. I wondered if she had taken his name off the list.
Uh-huh. Nope, not gone.
Right to his face.
Yep. It's just such a weird relationship.
It is.
Because she can't really kill him, as we've seen. Like she's
I thought she would. I really thought that she's going to run him right through the belly.
She tried. She tried her best.
What do you think his reaction was?
To her actually trying to kill him?
Yeah, what was his emotion?
I felt like his emotion was just, you silly girl. What are you doing?
Huh.
Like, it's not going to work.
I thought he was kind of shocked.
That she would even try it?
Just kind of a little bit of outrage, too. Like, he thought maybe they'd move beyond that.
Huh.
That was just, again, my initial
impression. Well, he shouldn't after what he did to those people in the hut.
Yeah.
The other episode.
But again, I don't know, man. It's hard to get a read on his morality.
Yeah.
Really hard
definitely.
To get a read on his morality.
I'm with you. For sure.
He's another one like Jamie. I can't decide whether he's trying to redeem himself or, you know, he just took a temporary vacation from being a shit.
The fight scene between them, I guess it wasn't a fight scene between them, but the fight scene of her, like, practicing her moves was really cool.
It was cool.
I like that.
Avatar, the last assbender for me. I'm with the Hound. I kind of feel like you prance around like that, you got your ass kicked. Like,
we don't know.
I don't
we
think
don't know what happened
got
to that
to
guy.
The real training. That this was just a wax on, wax off. You know, because if he'd pulled that shit with Meryn Trant, Arya would have been dead. She would have been bisected.
Yeah. The other thing I really like about this is, obviously, they would not have heard yet that Joffrey is dead. So she continues to say his name. I like that.
Oh, yeah,
I think that's just a cool little
piece. No
one's
sending them a raven.
Yeah, they haven't got a word. How would they?
Yeah.
So it's really cool that she's still saying his name as if she's going to kill him.
Let's talk about the creep-off. Lysa versus Littlefinger.
Oh, God.
Who's creepier?
Lysa.
Okay.
Lysa on every level. I mean, even if she wasn't breastfeeding in episode 2 or whatever, she'd still be creepier.
What would Peter have to do to take the creepy belt? I mean,
oh,
like,
God.
Fuck a frog on stage?
That's in the bonus scenes. Wow, to be creepier. Well, I mean, if he could breastfeed the kid, that would be pretty creepy,
I think. What if he breastfed?
That's what... Oh, okay.
Would that get creepy? They pulled a full...
Well, I don't know, because they would
me,
both get points for
Irene.
That.
Oh, that's true.
They would
true.
Both get points. Like,
that's true.
She's breastfeeding
creepy
him.
And he's a creeper and that.
Yeah. So I don't think so.
Strong play by Lysa, breastfeeding her 8-year-old son.
Yeah.
You think we're going to see him? I mean, he's like 12 years old now. They can't, in the bounds of good decency, show him.
I mean, Littlefinger barely has to bend over to meet him eye to eye.
Yeah.
Barely. So, no, you can't do that. That's, ugh. Ugh. How old is he supposed to be? Like 9 or something?
Like 8 or 9, but there again, I feel like even in this show, the show is kind of like, maybe 3 years has passed. What do you think, guys? Will you buy 3 years? I think in the book, it's like less than a year.
Gotcha.
Or just less than a year, but she is something else. She's a screamer. Found that out this episode.
Yeah, apparently. Unfortunately. Oof.
Where do you think this is heading, man?
So, was I supposed to know they were married? Are they actually married?
No.
Is that literal?
That was what that's what they were setting up.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, no, they did get married, yeah. So
like
they
she
are
said
now
something
married.
About a ceremony.
Yeah, no, they're getting married. Oh, well, That I don't know if you're not supposed to know anything about.
Okay. Well, they hint at it this episode.
Sure.
But then they like consummate it that night.
Right.
So I don't know what's up with that, but it was really disturbing as well. I didn't know Littlefinger. I mean, I knew he was conniving, and I knew he would manipulate people any way he could. But that way, by marrying some lunatic, I put that past Littlefinger.
But he won't use the power of the peen.
I mean, I didn't. We've never seen him fuck anything, right?
That's true. Nothing. Even in his brothels.
So now the first thing he fucks is that. No, well, thank you.
But maybe that's the whole point. That's if he can fuck his way to power, he will fuck, kill, lie, cheat.
That's true.
Steal.
Now I'm wondering if that is supposed to make me worry a little bit more for Sansa.
What do you
think? Because he's asking like, how did he touch you, or what has he done to your body? And she says nothing because he hasn't yet.
Right.
But will he?
I thought it was interesting that, did you catch that Sansa was telling lies as she was protesting that she's not a good liar?
No. What lies was she telling?
Oh, just going on and on how, like, you know, Peter says I'm a stupid little girl. I mean, she...
Yeah.
At this point in the story, that is a lie.
Yeah, he's not so mean to her.
No.
He does think that she's ignorant, though.
Well, yeah, but I mean, naive. I thought she was able to lie pretty quickly under duress.
Yeah, true.
And all the while protesting that she's a terrible liar.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's gotten her yellow belt.
Okay.
In lying.
Yeah.
Working her way to green. I don't know how belts work.
I don't know.
Unless they're holding up my pants. I really don't.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move. Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later. Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV+, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
So I think we've talked about that scene enough. That leaves us with the main event, Craster's Keep, the climax.
Yep. What is this guy's name?
Shit.
Locke, right?
Locke.
Okay, Beardsley, as I call him.
Locke has been stocked and shoved in two smoking barrels.
Okay. Three people this episode who needed to get killed got killed.
Oh?
Yeah. There was Locke. There was the leader of the lunatics, the mutineers.
I forgot his name as well.
The Willem Dafoe lookalike.
The ace knife or blade of
Gin
Alley.
And
pretty handy jacket
and Rust.
Monster Mines too. And Rast, yeah.
Rast.
Okay,
got
you're
it.
Right.
Yeah, so.
And a little bit of Revenge of the Starks. I feel like Ghost tearing out Rast's throat. In some way makes up for Grey Wind going down without a fight. It's been a long time since we've seen a Stark wolf actually kill somebody.
Grey Wind.
Grey Wind.
Grey Wind.
That's Rob's wolf.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was going to say, I didn't know that they killed the other wolf at Craster's Keep.
No. Grey Wind is Rob's that got killed at the...
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't know the names of them.
Yeah.
I know Ghost and Grey Wind and...
Sorry.
I can't keep the names of the people straight.
I know,
I'm not going to remember their fucking dogs.
I know.
Sorry.
What about the white one? Surely you know the white one.
No.
Really?
Ghost.
There you go.
It was a guess.
There you were this close to being replaced on the podcast. You got to at least know the albino one. Come on.
You should replace me with George R. R. Martin. That would make for a good podcast.
The funny thing is that he can't keep the wolves' names straight
God
either.
God damn it.
He actually uses an elaborate nickname and find and replace system and word. That's how he keeps them straight.
Wow. All right. What else do you want to talk about?
The yellow-haired sister fucker. The yellow-haired brother fucker. That's how he keeps them straight.
All right.
Find and replace.
That's a good system.
Yeah. Again, we got the no-holds barred match. Damn near tore Locke's head right off. Like, I couldn't ascertain the nature of the man's injury. I thought, initially, is that his spinal cord sticking up through his neck stump?
Yeah,
is that
ruined
just,
neck.
Is that just his neck assembly rent in half? Like, muscle and bone and everything?
So.
Just a fucking mess.
Yeah. Hodor's strong.
Don't fuck with Hodor.
I will not.
That's some Gypsy Danger level shit that he's pulling there. It's crazy.
I did notice one thing in those scenes right before Hodor got off the leash.
Yeah.
When they were kind of torturing what's-her-face, I don't know, the girl's name.
Yeah.
And they had her kind of up on this hook.
Uh-huh.
Those hooks will only work if your feet are off the ground. Otherwise, they don't work. And I can't believe they didn't pay attention to a detail like that. She's standing there. Her arms are halfway above her head. And she's hanging.
Oh, they're on a hook?
Yeah. She's hanging.
So she just planted her feet
somehow,
and raised her
but her feet are
off.
Yeah. So dumb.
Maybe there's something more to that. Maybe it's like a carabiner.
I don't know. No, it was just a hook.
They don't have that technology in Westeros? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think so.
They don't got springs and latches?
Gears? Okay. No, get out of here.
Complex mechanical parts. Michelle MacLaren directed this episode, and she really does action well.
She's been directing a lot lately.
She has. That sword fight was really good. I thought all of them were pretty good. The one that... The Gin Alley dude put in Jon Snow's hip bone. Felt like it went right straight to the bone. Might even got stuck in the bone.
Yeah, that's no good.
Yeah. Maybe he should wear some armor.
Maybe, yeah.
Also, as I said on Facebook, add the concept of surprise to the list of things Jon Snow knows nothing of.
Why?
You don't wait till nightfall with your ninja band to then attack the group screaming. Apparently from some such distance that a man can run into another building... Tell the dude, hey, we're being attacked by the Night's Watch, and have the guy run out, and they're still running towards the thing screaming.
Yeah.
Bad plan, Jon Snow.
Yeah, I've got to wonder if, he was probably scouting, he was probably a lookout or something, and spotted them, and they saw that he spotted them, but even then, if you're running and screaming, you would think,
I feel like Locke was getting along with Jon Snow, he's thinking, you know what, hey, maybe I'll just make a life at the Wall, and then he sees that bullshit, and he's like, nope, bolt until I die.
And he gets his head ripped off.
Which didn't last very long. Bran didn't get to meet Jon. How do you feel about that? Kind of bittersweet.
I understand the reason for it, and I think the seer guy is right, that Jon probably wouldn't have let him go if he had found him there. So I think he made the right decision, but yeah, I'm bummed about it.
Huh.
The second time that they've come inches from each other and haven't seen each other.
I don't know. I feel like that they could have spoke Stark to Stark and Bran could have used some magic combination of the words honor, duty, and...
Paralyzed.
paralyzed. Yeah, those words.
Yeah.
And John would have been like, I understand, and let him go.
Yeah.
And he's just have to, you know, do the honor duty. And
maybe, or maybe John would have gone with him. Who knows?
That'd be kind of kick ass.
Yeah. Maybe John can carry him around.
So speculate, how is this going to affect what goes on at the Dreadfort from here? Because this is kind of the worst case scenario for Roose Bolton. He thinks he's taking this care of this matter, and he's not going to ever find out one way or another.
Yeah, Locke will never report back.
And he's lost one of his lieutenants.
Yeah, bad news for him. I mean, that's what it comes down to, right? He's
Excellent.
Still got to hold Winterfell. I don't know what he's going to do.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Aside
on.
From that.
That wasn't a fair question to ask, because I was asking him, like, what's he going to say?
Yeah.
He's going to sit down and cry. He's going to puke his guts up and cry about it. Okay, I think that's where we reach the limits of our insights for an instant cast.
Okay.
Kind of dry at the beginning, but as always, I'm very entertained to how they kind of twist things and change things and advance the plot, and I thought it was enjoyable.
One last question before we go. Whose dress was prettier, Cersei's or Oberyn's?
Well, I mean, it's not even fair. Cersei's in mourning. She can only wear black.
True. Okay.
And he's got the fucking sun shining on his
back. Yeah, that's unfair. I'm sorry.
I'd say he wore it better. If you'd like to send in some feedback and ask us penetrating, insightful questions such as those, you can do so at gameofthrones@baldmove.com. As always, you can talk to us on facebook.com/baldmove, or you can tweet at Jim over there @baldmove on Twitter. We will have our full cast out sometime on Tuesday with a full scene-by-scene discussion, your feedback, and our patent-pending spoiler section, Beyond the Wall of Music. Please join us back then. In the meantime, I am your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
We'll see you in a couple days.
He has to pay the iron price.
He has to pay the iron price.
He'll never respect you while he lives in it.
Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Joffrey's thirsty, killing pain the hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm found. I'm the blood of the north when it all comes.